Wait, let me try one more time.
That was an a cappella version.
That was an a cappella, yeah.
Intro. Very well done. That was good. It's good memory, yeah. Okay,
yeah, yeah. That's just the start of the latest scenes, that.
Yeah. So, I had a dream the other night.
Wow, straight into it.
Yeah, straight in. I'm going straight in with what they say you should never do. in a group scenario, or to anyone, just describe your dream. But it's film related.
Okay.
So it's all right.
All right, yeah, yeah.
My dream was kind of like, what if E.T. was set now?
Okay.
And
2024 like, release of E.T.
Yeah, yeah, like, what would happen?
Oh, well, they'd solve it in a second with a phone.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to have a mobile phone, yeah. And he'd go, oh, I'm phoning home. Yeah. And the cell signal would be so good that they'd do it.
Yeah, just be like, what's the number?
Yeah.
Yeah. If Kevin Bacon's cell reception could be good in Guardians of the Galaxy, then exactly. Yeah, so, exactly. But like, there were some bits from, like, basically, I was watching the film of E.T. if it was shot in 2024.
Yeah.
You were watching it, sorry. You weren't in it.
It was like
so
I was
your
watching
dream,
it.
Your dream was,
yeah,
you're sat in a cinema. I just want to get myself in the right head. You're sat in a cinema watching E.T. set in E.T. 2024.
The remake.
I'm two Plato's Caves in at this point.
Right, yeah. Because you've got the first Plato's Caves of existence.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second
a dream.
Plato, yeah.
And then in a dream, I'm watching shadows on a cave wall, effectively. So it's, yeah.
And you're watching Elliot chained up in a cave watching.
Yeah. That's what happened. Oh, my God.
You're suspending your belief in the dream. Yeah.
So, obviously, when E.T. goes to hide amongst the toys, kids don't have toys like that anymore.
They don't. Do you know what, Tom? I've always, like, it's sign of the times, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Kids don't have toys anymore.
What my brain transplanted for all these toys was just cardboard boxes. So he just hid amongst the cardboard boxes with all the and had to draw faces on them. So that when the camera pans around, there's just a load of boxes with faces drawn
with
on.
Alien faces on.
His own self-portrait that he's done real quick.
Yeah.
It just pans across and it's just him and he's like, okay, not in here.
A bunch
of boxes with alien faces.
That's
on.
That's just a bunch of Alienware laptops. Yeah.
And then the other bit that stuck out to me was, for some reason, E.T. was watching The Lord of the Rings.
The extended editions.
Yeah. And, it could be basically just the scene where Aragorn kicks the head and breaks his toes
and
in real
Elliot's
life.
Elliot's in school and goes, did you know that?
Well, that could happen as well. Yeah. This is the thing. This is why I'm throwing it out to you.
Yeah.
Just so we can add more to this film
a
that I had. But like, no, E.T. goes up to the screen with his little finger and is like, oh no, I'm going to have to heal him.
I'm going to have to
because he can tell he's hurt in real life.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He can tell that. Yeah.
But that was it. That was E.T.
That was E.T. 2024.
Oh, no, I did experience some sleep paralysis, actually. Like, I was sort of laid on my side and I looked over and E.T. was just stood there by my bedside table. He was looking at me. And I was like, go away, E.T.
E.T.
And then just fell asleep.
I like, you know, how other people have sleep paralysis demons that are like witches who are like pinning them to the bed and like a terrifying creature. Like,
or aliens experimenting on them.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
And you've got E.T. and you're like, Oh, not now, E.T.
Go away.
By the way, how was it like a 2024 E.T.? How are you so sure? It sounds like there wasn't... Were they fidget spinners?
They kept telling me it was very much tell, don't show in this dream.
Come on, Elliot. It's 2024. You can't be late for school.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure someone in the film went, this is like what E.T. would be like if it was 2024.
But it was like nothing particularly different.
Nothing really changed. No, yeah. Parents were still divorced. Like it was.
Bryan Cranston walks out onto the screen, like onto a stage at the start of the movie, and says in a suit, and says, "This is what E.T. would be like if it was shot in 2024."
This is part of some extended cinematic universe, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Part one.
City, yeah.
It's part of Dune.
Asteroid City, another movie that's about three Plato's cave deep.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen that? Spoiler alert for Asteroid City, if you get what we're talking about.
Whoa!
You love aliens, don't you? You're obsessed with them. You're scared of them.
I'm scared of them. Yeah. I'm terrified. Like, I used to be terrified of E.T., which is why I'm so, like weirded out by the fact that I wasn't terrified of E.T. in my best.
Go away,
Go away.
Not now.
Do you think an alien's going to like come and get you one day? Do you think that's how you'll die?
Well, I do have this fear of alien abduction, like a genuine like terror.
What do they?
Like,
what do you think they do to you when they abduct you?
I don't know.
It might be nice. Maybe they just want to hang out.
Yeah.
Watch E.T. with you.
Maybe it's like, and they're like, ah.
Yeah. They're like, we love this bit. Yeah.
This is so not right. Yeah. Oh, the accuracy of this.
Maybe they just want you to explain all the human bits. Like, they love it whenever E.T.'s doing anything. They're like, that makes sense. But then, like, a human's eating something. They're like, what is that?
Why is the mum crying?
What is that? She's not leaking from her eye sockets.
But yeah, that was E.T. in 2024. That was my dream / sleep paralysis.
Nice. Well, we're doing kaiju movies this week. Off the back of
off the rampant success of Kong X Godzilla.
Kong X Godzilla, and actually, Terry, you mentioned to me the other day Godzilla Minus One. That was. Did I just say Godzilla?
It was Godzilla.
Godzilla to you, sir.
Godzilla. Well, Godzilla and Godzilla to you, King Kong.
So is it Kong X? I thought it was Kong versus.
No, they've done that already.
Now they're working together.
Yeah.
So why is X? It's like they times by each other. They're multiplied by each other.
I don't know why it's got X in there. Like,
has anyone here seen it?
No. Surely it would be plus rather than times.
Maybe they've done a plus, but like,
It's by, you know, like
Kong by Godzilla.
Yeah.
Like he's opened up a cafe called King Kong.
It's like King Kong squared, but you can't.
That's the next one. Yeah.
It's just, but what I've found interesting, and I haven't seen the movie, so like this is, you know, rampant speculation, but from the trailers, what I found very interesting is that firstly, that you get the thing that you would maybe expect to be not a twist but a fun reveal in the movie, which is they gave King Kong a punchy fist.
That was mental.
But what they didn't do, which I really would have expected them to do, and it must therefore be a twist in the movie, is explain what they're fighting.
Yeah, like what?
I think they're fighting another King Kong. They're fighting Red King Kong.
Red King Kong.
I didn't see that in the trailer, in the teaser. Yeah, the poster is just them.
Yeah.
And they're already bigger than any building, right? Like, they're enormous. Yeah. And they're coming towards us, and like the helicopters just look like flies buzzing around them. And King Kong's got this huge fist, and they're running towards me, and I'm just like, whatever you want, got it. There's no question. Like,
take my money, please.
It's fine. I'm the baddie.
I don't understand what you would even need to team up for.
That's the thing. It's like, okay, it's Godzilla versus King Kong. I presume there's a greater evil in Godzilla versus King Kong.
yeah, I think it's Doomsday from Batman v Superman. No, I don't know.
I thought you had an answer.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but anytime there's like a villain that's like crazy powerful, I tend to just feel like it's a bit, they're always a bit sort of a bit dull and like uninteresting, and like I feel like stakes kind of get lost a little bit in a way.
You,
like the big year
go. Lex Luthor to Zod, right?
Yeah. Or like, what was the one that was like a planet-eating one in like Fantastic Four and
Galaxus.
Stuff? And
yeah.
It's just, it gets too like, well, I can't really relate it to anything almost. You know what I mean? And,
yeah. I think like the, what you want with those big threats, a little like Mothra, is you kind of want them to be a one step removed. The idea of them should be, the reason that Galactus is, almost works, right, but doesn't in most Fantastic Four incarnations, like movie ones, is that and you know, Silver Surfer, whatever, is that it's not really a battle against that thing. They're not fighting that guy. It's like, here is the end of the world. It's kind of Lovecraft. It's kind of cosmic horror. It's this sort of, it's
like the idea more than anything.
So that's why, and the reason that Lovecraft doesn't have Cthulhu marching through the waves and smashing stuff up and then someone shoots him in the head is because, like, the horror is based on that unknown, right? Like, and so, like, when you look at the Silver Surfer and his whole thing is he knows what's coming and he's trying to tell everyone,
get gone,
get out.
this guy's
got a hunger, and it's not for a burger, it's for a planet.
Yes, it's for Planet Burger.
Planet Burger. I think that was a line from the Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer.
He's here to eat planets and chew gum. And no, he's not even into the gum actually. But he just wants to kill planets. Like, look out.
He's just finished chewing the last planet. But like, yeah, I think that like, usually if there's something that should is so powerful that you just can't stop it, you don't want it to be stood around. And like, you know, everyone keeps trying to punch it, and then it just, you know, like, there's a reason that, like, I don't know, Thanos was a little bit boring in a way. Because like, there were like three separate occasions that the Avengers all come and they try and punch him.
And then
he's just like, I'm too good to punch.
Yeah, I find that a little frustrating in those films. Yeah, but they did well to like give him a character at least throughout it. But like, yeah, anytime it's like, how is he taking all that? Like at one point there was like Thor's hammer. He channeled all of that power into Tony Stark's suit, which then tripled it and then shot it at him. And he was just fine. He's kind of just brushed it off. And he's just like, well, now those are the most superpowered things I can even fathom from all these characters that we've known so long. And he's not even bothering
him. And now
like,
we're in Dragon Ball Z mode, right? You've just got to find the next thing that's super hyper.
It's got to be the next Goobly Boop.
This is something I've thought about. In Infinity War, where Doctor Strange is fighting him and he's shooting out all these portals around so Spider-Man can come and loop him and stuff like that. Earlier on in the movie, he chopped a hand off using a portal.
Oh yeah, just do that.
Just do that on. Yeah.
That's a good point. It seems very effective. Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my god, he could have just
anytime.
I get he's just too wrapped up in it. He can't see them as just the simple like slicing, like as a weapon. Yeah. He's like, no, it's a portal. What are you talking about?
He could have just done that when they had Thanos asleep. At least, just chop the arm off. Like they've got to grab the Infinity Gauntlet. Maybe Thanos's skin is too.
He's just too.
Portals.
Yeah, this is he's a Titan, which at no point has anyone ever explained what that is. And this is what kind of what I mean, right?
I guess it's a show don't tell kind of thing. Maybe that's why he didn't do it.
Sure,
it's not going to work.
I don't know. Like, so villains, you want them to be your Hans Grubers, really, don't you? Vulnerable, but like with so many things in place to cheat.
Yeah,
it's cheat. Villains are the best. The best villains are the ones who cheat. They're the ones who you're like, I'm about to beat you at your own game, and then they go, well, what about the button I press?
Well, that's what makes them villains, right?
Yeah.
That's why when King Kong and Godzilla are charging towards the camera, they actually go in for Alan Rickman, who stood on like a ledge, like off camera.
He survived somehow. Yeah.
That's it, they're fighting.
Hans Gruber. His
first Die Hard, like, he just somehow survived the fall. Or whatever. Yeah.
He fell so hard, he went into the hollow earth.
But yeah, like, Godzilla vs. King Kong feels like a Transformers of, like, it's just, you know, action, this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. It definitely sounded like Godzilla Minus One was way more based around the, like...
Yeah, no, it's really... Have you seen it, Tom?
No, I've heard about it, though. It's Japanese, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the latest Japanese one. I guess they were like, oh, we need to make something fit around this, and the story in it is just like really solid. It's like so there's like this kamikaze pilot during World War II, Japanese pilot.
I've heard about who this,
He basically he doesn't go through with it. Like, he's too scared. Like, he doesn't want to, you know, die. So he finds a small island to sort of park on, and somehow survives it. And then he goes back to his hometown, and he's like shunned by everybody there, essentially, because it's like, you know, it's seen as such a like betrayal, you know, that he took this cowardly way out.
Yeah.
And he sort of befriends this lady who's also sort of in this horrible, like, the wreckage of the land of what's happened to the place, like, from the war. And like, they're slowly sort of trying to build up some. It's kind of less like him slowly trying to get over him, the idea of like that he's worthless.
Yeah.
And it's just like a beautiful sort of like insight into that film, and done really well. Also, there's a giant freaking monster. And it's just like, oh yeah. Like, you keep getting reminded of it, and I'm like, oh yeah, Godzilla's in it. Like, I was so wrapped up in the film, and then it's like this shit happens, and it's like, oh my God, yeah. Yeah, so it's really, really great. Like, definitely worth a watch.
Is Godzilla at any point, I'm sure it will be, but I'm sure, is like Godzilla at any point like a metaphor for his anxiety? They just completely ignored what they could have done?
No. I think stronger than ever, it feels like this one's a strong metaphor for the horrors of war, essentially. Yeah. And like, you know, like, especially specifically the nuclear bombs and stuff that was dropped, you know.
That's what Godzilla was. It was like the horror, it was a personified horror of... like the post-nuclear bomb, like fallout, essentially. Like,
yeah, even to the point of its skin being all kind of looking like sort of burns and stuff in the original iterations. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's nice when, and we've done this before with monster movies, right? It's the same thing. It is a monster movie. Kaiju movies are monster movies. They've become spectacle, certainly in many cases, especially in the West. Mm. But like, King Kong is. A metaphor for like the West desire to take stuff from wherever they get it from, and then when they bring it back and try and put it under a microscope and exploit it for
colonialism,
for the
world. Essentially,
yeah, like, it crumbles and it dies, and something beautiful dies when you look at when you try to exploit it for money and fame. It's monster movies are also like that, right? Like, every monster movie has a metaphor, which is an ill of society that it stands for.
So what is the metaphor of Kong X Godzilla? Like, question. I feel like the metal glove is definitely...
it's got to be the Transformers.
Some sort of anti-capitalist thing,
yeah,
I don't know.
It must be, yeah, when you have to... It's the societal ill of putting a hat on a hat. You know, like, when you have something good and you try to ungooden it by putting
nice.
More...
It's going to meta.
I don't know. None of us have seen it, guys. So
it's true.
Brilliant.
It's true.
Like, it could be the next cultural touchstone.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be dated so bad if like, it turns out to win like 10 Oscars. It changes lives. Like...
Roger Ebert is crying watching it, just like, oh my God,
beyond the grave.
I think so, yeah. They bring him back to review movies, I think.
So yeah, I think like with monster movies, I think we should, when we hear these titles, we should also be asking the question, what societal ill is this a metaphor for?
Oh boy.
I always love coming up with these angles after Tom's chosen the titles.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then he goes, no, that's not
that doesn't fit.
One title is a societal ill.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
I'll take it upon myself to do my best to make the strong metaphors for each of these cases. I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
It always works best when it's after the fact.
Yeah, we've done the plot. Yeah. Littering.
Littering.
Yeah.
So what's a film that feels like it could definitely be in this genre, but it's so far away from it that it's not? Or isn't?
I'm not going to say the obvious until we're happy with any other answer. The obvious is on the right. It's on the
I don't understand the question.
So we try and find the very edges of the genre here. Like we try and break that idea of genre just before we start recording that genre. Yeah. let's say something like Fargo. Is it Fargo?
They kind of made this film.
Yeah, is your Western like?
Yes,
is not quite a Western, but it feels so Western that it makes
very heavily inspired by that.
Or it fits the tropes, but not it's not technically that thing. You know, that sort of so what's like?
Oh, I do know the obvious answer.
The obvious answer, which is Colossal.
That technically involves a kaiju like creature, but it's kind of more just not. It's about
addiction and small town sense, town like pettiness and jealousy.
I like that film. Yeah.
It's such a good film.
That is on that is on the Life to Pitch reading list. What I was gonna say was Nope.
It's always fucking Nope.
It is always Nope because it does fit into a lot of genres.
It does.
Okay, I can see it as well. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
The flying sorcerer is a kaiju.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some sort of a beastie that they can't comprehend or even understand, and it's
and it is a metaphor doing its thing.
But it's more about
wild animals being being exploited.
And untamable. Yeah.
It's about spectacle at the end of the day. Like, the whole film's about spectacle, especially from like the opening shot.
It's got a lot of King Kong in it, actually.
Yeah.
It does have a lot of King Kong in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always my joke answer, but then we're like, oh no, wait. Yeah, no.
It's got a lot of the same themes. Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. From what I recall, isn't it? There's a sort of theme of like trying to comprehend and put on like
just
more like human but I mean like the metaphor of like I don't know something
it's,
about
he's trying to because there's a chimpanzee in it,
that's the thing, and that's like, the connection, right? And it's like trying to understand wild animals' behaviors and in a human way that really can't be understood
and
by
try
us
to control them as
Stephen
Yeun's character in that movie, like he's traumatized by this experience with a chimpanzee he had when I was a kid, and like when he gets the show going where he thinks he's wrangled this UFO.
Just like the monkey, he thinks he had some sort of connection with
this,
but really it's just like kind of chaotic and random, and we always try to do that, don't we? We always try to make sense of nonsense and stuff.
It's just like this Lovecraftian being that has no sort of, it's basically just out to eat stuff.
It's not a god, it's not got a divine ideas for mankind or anything. It's just, primitive and
just a flying monster.
It's a wild animal. There's only so much you can.
Yeah, that's why they're on a ranch and stuff, because it's like horses and stuff as well, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
I need to give that another watch. I didn't totally enjoy a lot of it, to be honest, but I feel like the balance of like surface level entertainment versus deeper stuff maybe is like catered more towards, I'm supposed to be reading a lot into this and I'm not necessarily enjoying it as much. Whereas like Get Out, I feel like did perfectly both of those things.
It balanced it quite well. I prefer Nope, and like the more I watch it, the more I get out of it. But yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Like there's a lot more subtext being pushed directly into the screen.
But I'll give it rewatchable.
It's one of those, a lot like something like Blade Runner, where you go, oh, and then the more you think about it, actually, you know what Castle did that with us. I've told the story 1,000 times on the podcast, but like when we first went to see Colossal, it was This is stupid. What? What?
This is bonkers.
This is ridiculous. Like, we went to see it, like, on a spur-of-the-moment thing. It was, like, it wasn't really being shown anywhere in the cinema. And we kind of was like, that was ridiculous. Like, they just kept making making decisions that made absolutely no fucking sense. Yeah. And then, like, just wild shit happens, and then there's another left turn. And it's like, and then you think about it, and it's like, with the subtext, with the emotional decision, it's like, oh shit, like, this means quite a lot about, like, about people's dependency on their own small, like, about on like drugs and alcohol to kind of get and to bring each other down in this society.
Yeah, and not, like, wanting to take responsibility for your own actions and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that film is just an indie film, really, isn't it? But it happens to have a giant monster in it. Yeah,
it's really good.
It's incredible. It's, we recorded, like, a joke review podcast
where we were
like, oh, let's pitch this movie, and then at the end we go, oh, it's actually colossal. And then the more we talked about it on that review, we were like, oh no, this is good. This is actually a good movie.
This is sounding awfully similar to Godzilla Minus One, honestly. You should check it out. Little plug.
Another one I'd put on that list of sort of quite removed from the genre is 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
It's in a kaiju universe.
And she
does fight.
I like to think the last 10 minutes of that film don't exist.
Yeah, once she's out, it's sort of like, they could have cut just to her silhouette walking into the mist.
It was so good up until that point.
It's one of those films where, like, at the end of it, like, when she starts fighting the flying alien machine at the end, I'm like, what a day. Like, fucking hell. Like, it does give it closure, but also there is a temptation, like with Get Out, like, to cut it a little bit earlier. Like, the point at which I'd cut Get Out is when his mate shows up and goes, I told you not to go in that house, and then cut, directed by Jordan Peele. Like, just like a punchline ending to that film.
Wait, isn't that basically the ending?
It's basically, there is, like, a lot more. Like, there's him, them driving back.
And you get
with
get
the music.
Home,
it's a bit of creepy music, and like, we see, like, his girlfriend's face on the floor and stuff. And I'm just like, oh god, I wish he'd cut on that line. Like,
oh, just a full on, just end on just that note thing.
Directed by Jordan Peele, like, right at the end. It's the same with 10 Cloverfield Lane. Like, when she gets out and, like, stands on the car, and there's just this flying saucer off in the distance. You're like, and then she just goes, oh, like,
what,
that's
what
when
a
you
day.
Cut.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been nicer.
I think it maybe would, but then also it would have given it this kind of feeling of, like, maybe John Goodman was right. And I don't think I'd have liked that as much.
I mean, I did watch it recently, and if we're going into, you're only going to know if you'd seen this film. But there is, to be fair, so she comes out, then a load of just crazy, stupid things happen because they're trying to tie it into Cloverfield, which for some reason people still care. And then, but to be fair, after all that crazy shit happens, then she drives off, right?
Yeah.
There actually is a good bit
that
works for the narrative of her personal arc, because if you remember at the beginning of the film, she's driving away from a relationship.
She's
basically running away, isn't she, from her responsibilities a little bit, you could argue, maybe some commitment issues, whatever it is. Right at the end, there's a thing on the radio saying, oh, we need help in the city. And she's like, comes to this crossroads, do I flee or do I go and help people? And she decides to drive more towards the city, implying that it's like, oh, she's learned something from the whole process. That was satisfying. I'll give it that. That was nice.
I feel like crazy
action sequence where she's being lifted in a thing and a Molotov cocktail.
It should have been slightly easier to kill that terrifying beast.
It should have taken her less time, it was so out of place. It's so
John Goodman was the terrifying beast.
I think like, you know, her, like, John Goodman sort of like chasing her out of this hole, right? And sort of like him getting got by the beast and her like using his resource that he'd brought with to try and get her back to defeat her would have been like a little bit more crunch it into a single scene.
From what I know, it was a completely separate story and nothing to do with Cloverfield whatsoever. It was like a smaller independent story, and like to try and get more people to watch it. They sort of tied it. I think maybe J.J. Abrams read it and liked it or something and gave them the funding, as long as they tied it in with Cloverfield. Yeah. Which I think artistically brings up an interesting question of, like, would you do something like that? Say you wrote 10 Cloverfield Lane. And imagine you're more on the side of, like, I didn't want any actual monsters in it or aliens or anything like that. Imagine if you were like, oh, this could get funded and distributed to the whole world, potentially like a global release.
Yeah.
If you, you know, for 10 minutes of the film, you add in this connection to Cloverfield, or would you stick with your guns and say, no, it has to be as is, but potentially only get it as small release? And
thing is,
I don't know, I feel like that's an interesting question.
Call that movie anything else, and it's not a Cloverfield movie. And the only thing that ties with Cloverfield is by name.
And kind of the only reason I've seen it is because it has Cloverfield in the title.
Yeah.
This is it. And I probably wouldn't have heard about it. Like, and a lot of people... So it's tricky, isn't it? Because it's like, we still enjoyed it, right?
Yeah.
And
got to see it. Yeah, it's a good movie.
I always question this. And if I ever get big enough to ever be in that position, luckily, you know, like a Hollywood movie star or producers or whatever want to fund my projects, I think it's going to be a tough decision, honestly, that sort of thing to make.
Yeah.
Tempting, and I don't blame anyone for doing whatever they do.
Sell out immediately. We sell out before. Before we're asked. Okay.
By the way, this is brought to you by Watsits.
And Lockheed Martin.
Yes, we went to the top first. They didn't have to pay us anything. We chose the one that like everyone will know. All the corporations will know they've got no morals. At all.
So you went straight for the...
Sidewinder missile sort of, you know, like...
You're just hoping they'll throw you a bone, like a shout-out or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully not a bone. Like, where are they getting that bone from?
Big old nuclear eviscerator. Yeah.
But yeah, I quite like the idea, though, that the original draft of 10 Cloverfield Lane, before they linked it to Cloverfield, was just a big John Goodman on the horizon.
Like coming in the distance.
Yeah, yeah. She gets
like,
out.
Like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
There's our kaiju.
She gets out of the bunker, like got away from John Goodman, and there's just a bigger John Goodman.
and the moral of this movie is like just everything is meaningless. You shouldn't have tried.
You know what? It arguably would have been more in keeping with the themes of the film than random aliens. Like he's trying to save her from himself the whole time, right? Like that works.
There's always a bigger John Goodman.
Come here, little princess.
And he was so good in that, wasn't he? Don't you think? He's such a lovable character always, isn't he? And it's just to see him in that makes me fucking terrified of him.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the guy I always forget the name of, but the guy who's the police chief in Hot Fuzz.
Nick Frost.
Edward Woodward. This brought to you by Watsits.
Jim Broadbent.
Broadbent.
Damn it, sorry.
Yeah. Of course.
It's Jim Broadbent is what I'm...
Who's Edward Woodward? I'm going to Google that. They look the same.
Edward Woodward is a film director, isn't he?
Talk amongst yourselves.
Jim Broadbent, yeah.
Yeah, so with Jim Broadbent, I have this thing, it's the same with John Goodman, it's like... He seems so fluffy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he seems so fluffy. And then you see him in a role where he has to just flip. And he's so scary. Like, he's in a heist movie with, like, Michael Caine and a bunch of other people. It's like a real...
An old people heist movie.
And it was a shit movie.
Was it Monuments Men? No.
No.
No, it was the one that was, like, the British Monuments Men.
It had Daredevil in it.
Matt Damon?
Yeah, Charlie Cox.
Do we not pretend that one doesn't exist?
I love how there's Ben Affleck as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting everyone mixed up today.
But yeah, like he was in this it was like King of Thieves, I think it was called. Is that right? I can't remember. But yeah, anyway, so like
Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves. I know that. Wait, isn't
that's
that
a pirate game?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I can't wait for that.
He was in this movie with Michael Caine and all that stuff, and he just fucking smashes a chair suddenly, and it's just like this person who's like, you know, Jim Broadbent, he's a sweet old man. All he does is be a sweet old man, and then it's just like he's this terrifying villain.
Well, before he was like a big movie star, he was the police chief or the policeman from Only Fools and Horses. He'd be the one that knew them all from school and was the snitch in school. And then like there's bits where like Del Boy is obviously trying to outsmart him and stuff like that. Yeah. But then like when he turns it on, it's like it's not a comedy anymore. It's really quite serious, yeah.
That's nice. Don't they say a lot of like comedic actors are surprisingly good at the dramatic stuff? Yeah. I like to think that because as a comedian, I like to be like, yeah, see, it's the hardest thing to do, comedy. Actually, all the others are really easy.
It definitely is. I can do drama so well!
By the way, I was only slightly wrong. Edward Woodward plays Tom Weaver, the one who looks at all the video footage in Hot Fuzz.
Oh, that guy.
Anyway.
It's just Ed Wood, the film director.
No, you're thinking of Ed Wood.
The Tim Burton movie.
That was a film. Ed Wood. Who's Tim Burton? We solved it.
Not Edward Wood.
There was so many, that was so tangential. We were looking for Jim Broadbent and we got like three different things removed.
I thought you were going to go with Jim Broadbent, I'm pretty sure, plays the dad in The Borrowers.
And
isn't John Goodman also in that as well? Or am I thinking of John Goodman and Jim Broadbent?
John Goodman's John Goodman is in The American Borrowers. No, wait, unless he plays the real man in the English one.
Because there's not two. I'm pretty sure there's just one Borrowers movie.
No,
BBC series.
Yeah, there's one with Doctor Who in it. As Christopher Eccleston.
What?
Yeah, he plays the Borrower one time. I watched it literally just for him. Had a bit of a crush on him for a while.
Borrowers. The kaiju movie that isn't a kaiju
We're the kaijus! No! It was us all along.
Oh, speaking of which,
let's pitch some movies.
Alright, so from James and I, we've got Grendel in Hollywood.
Grendel?
Who's Grendel?
Grendel, I believe, is the monster from Beowulf.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. What does it look like?
Just a big, big, swampy, berry monster, isn't it, I think?
I don't know, because my only experience of Beowulf was from a Star Trek Voyager episode in which the Doctor, Robert Picardo, has to fight Grendel, but it doesn't fight Grendel. It's just light because it's an energy being that's gone into the holodeck. Right.
We're not well informed on this one, are we?
My experience with Beowulf was this weird BBC animation that I watched when I was ill one day. There was like the Canterbury Tales and then Beowulf afterwards. It was a weird day because I've never seen this production ever again. And I was fascinated by it. It was a great little animation.
I'm sure it's on YouTube by now.
Probably. I'd hope so.
All that obscure BBC stuff is all on YouTube.
Well, it's like, what was it, Ocean Odyssey.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought I'd hallucinated that for ages because we couldn't, like, because it was called something else in Australia. So me and my friend just couldn't find Ocean Odyssey anywhere.
Okay, so Grendel, what was it called? Grendel
in Hollywood.
In Hollywood, I love this.
Yeah.
So Grendel, I like the idea that in Hollywood there is sort of like stories being made real.
Yeah.
You know, someone's like designed a machine from in that kind of like Last Action Hero way. Right? You know, where like the action hero that Arnie plays is kind of steps out of the movie screen.
Yeah.
And so does his, like, it's a magical, like, fantasy, like, what do they call it? Like a magic portal fantasy type thing.
Yeah.
Except it's like the magic portal is from the screen into the real world. So someone makes a, you know, it's
Last Action Hero style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like, you know, someone makes a Beowulf and out comes Grendel.
By the way, Grendel, just so you have an image in your mind, I just had a little cheeky look. Grendel is kind of like, kind of looks like a sort of freakish, skinny, kind of monstrous, almost like a mummy, mummified. It looks like they're kind of like they got third degree burns all over their whole body, a bit gobliny.
From what I remember, Beowulf just sort of rocks up into town to kill this giant monster that's attacking, and then he realizes that Grendel is like the mum of this monster and is much bigger, and much worse things happen. I think that's the story of Beowulf, just to summarize.
Can we have a happy ending for this one? I feel like they always end up dying or like something horrible happens. Maybe this one, they just get a nice hug and, you know, maybe, feel better.
Well, Beowulf, who I think we have as the actor Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
I think he should just fall in love with Grendel.
Oh.
Yeah. I think
the only one showing them love and compassion.
Yeah.
I think they sort of do a sort of, because they're in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Like they end up in two cliques of what I like about this, right, is that Beowulf,
we're pitching a rom-com.
Yeah.
Yay.
Beowulf, so I need you to understand this, right? We are in Hollywood. Last Action Hero doesn't take place in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
In Last Action Hero, Arnie is just a fictional character from a movie and comes out into this boy's life, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Imagine if Arnie, at that time, like meets Arnie, the actor Arnie, right? This is Beowulf, played by Keanu Reeves, is meeting Keanu Reeves, actor Keanu Reeves.
Okay.
And they become friends. And Keanu Reeves introduces his friend Beowulf to his buddy, like...
Grendel.
His buddy, like, I don't know, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Right? They go to a party. Beowulf, meanwhile, played by Kris Kristofferson, is like meets up with, and people think it's Kris Kristofferson because he's played by Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah, okay.
He gets invited to other Hollywood parties. They're just they end up on opposite cliques of Hollywood.
And in one of these parties, a giant bear monster appears, which Kris Kristofferson kills.
This sounds like a hot mess. It's good.
But like, like Grendel ends up in the artsy, like art house cinema scene of Hollywood. Beowulf
LA.
Ends up in like big movie, action movie stuff, and they end up on the opposite side, but then like they end up working together. They don't realize they've signed up for the same movie with Robert Pattinson, and
it toes that line. It's artistic, but also it's got mass appeal.
Oh my god!
Yeah. So Dev Patel and Robert Pattinson are working on a movie together.
Dev Patel and Robert Pattinson are the only two people that can toe that line. Willem Dafoe.
They end up falling in love while working on it.
Aww.
Directed by Damien Chazelle.
Yeah. Ooh, hello.
Who is also in that line between our director and...
All right, I like it. The reviews are divided,
it's a little bit navel-gazy, is it?
Yeah.
It's a little bit for Hollywood, isn't it? Mm. A bit like La La Land. It's just a little bit for
But there's
Hollywood.
Definitely some scenes that are in there for crowd appeal.
Yeah,
you know, there's some stomping around and some monsters.
We're going to release this about sort of January, February for Oscar buzz time.
It's going to win.
It's like someone who's taken a lot of lessons from like what's won Oscars and then just not really learned anything from them.
Yeah, because magic does not go down well in Oscar season.
Yeah. In order to make this work, magic has to exist. Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Life's a Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.